Hi, I'm Elise.
I'm Matt, and welcome to Pod Race, a Star Trek Deep Space Nine podcast. If this is your first time joining us, we're two friends watching Star Trek Deep Space Nine and sharing both our deep and irreverent thoughts on our favorite Star Trek series.
This week, we're talking about Season 5, Episode 4, Nor, the Battle to the Strong. Teleplay by Renee Echeverria and directed by Kim Friedman. Nor, the Battle to the Strong aired on October 21st, 1996.
This week on Deep Space Nine, after diverting to the Federation Hospital in Ajon Prime looking for an interesting story, Jake believes himself to be a coward when repeated Klingon attacks awaken him to the reality of war and force him to abandon Dr. Bashir and run for cover. Not only is this episode in, like, I think it's the top three or top five for longest titles of Star Trek episodes, it really is giving TOS in that way for The World is Hollow and I Have Touched the Sky being the one I'm thinking of. Also, we are quoting, I think it's Ecclesiastes, or it's somewhere in the Hebrew Bible. I'll look it up, but near the end of the episode. But after those fun facts, Elise, did you or did you not remember this episode?
I vaguely recalled this episode once it started. Like, I remembered that there was an episode where Jake and Bashir had to, like, do some war shit. I didn't remember, like, the specifics.
Yeah, you just remembered kind of the pairing, right?
Yes, and that it was, like, frightening, like, in the episode.
Yeah. This is an episode I always forget is in season 5, because, like, in my mind, it's, like, a season 4 episode.
Right.
I think just because of, like, the Klingon War stuff, but...
Yeah, I kind of keep forgetting that that's happening, because... It really only happens in Deep Space Nine and in Star Trek Discovery prior, but that's a different thing.
Yeah. Well, and, like, I had this point later in the notes, but I guess we can, like, speak to it now. Like, it always kind of bugged me how it's, like, the season kicks off with basically the detente with the Klingons, back to the point that, like, last week, Grilka et al. Are, like, coming to the station, you know, because... there's been that detente and we're working towards, you know, peace. And then all of a sudden things are alive again and, you know, talks broke down and we're back there. And then it's like, at the end of the episode.
Fuck a ceasefire. That's what this episode is.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's, like, a couple lines speaking to it, but it's just like, really? You just wanted this episode? But when I was kind of researching and looking into, you know, Memory Alpha and the Deep Space Nine Companion, the original idea was it was going to be a Cardassian settlement and a Cardassian hospital. Which lore-wise would have made more sense with the detente, with the Federation, you know, and the Klingon War there. But they had just, during Apocalypse Rising, with all the Klingons and the Klingon base, how expensive it is to do an all-alien show, like, with the extras. And that had kind of gone over budget, and they were looking to save money because they were also saving money towards the big 30th anniversary episode that was going to be quite expensive coming down the pipe.
Is that the one that's in two episodes that I can't wait for?
That's my favorite
episode of Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, so that's why they, like, you know, okay, well, we'll make it, you know, a Federation hospital and whatever. So, again, from a production standpoint, I get it.
Yeah.
It's just really weird that you have this, like, war is hell episode when you're already, like, the war is kind of over, but then not over, then over again.
Yeah. I said this also later in the notes, but, like, there's a scene where Dax is, like, the Farragut got destroyed, and it was obvious to me that they had Dax delivering that so that they didn't have to show it to us.
Yeah.
Also saving money.
Yeah. All right. So I was correct. It is the book of Ecclesiastes, chapter 9, verse 11. I returned and saw under the sun that the race is not to the swift, nor the battle to the strong, neither yet bread to the wise, nor yet riches to the men of understanding, nor yet favor to men of skill, but time and chance happeneth to them all.
The entirety of my Ecclesiastes knowledge is the one song lyric in the new Boy Genius album, that came out a year ago. Lisa Dacus has, like, a line about Ecclesiastes, and I'm like, oh, okay, I don't know anything about that person otherwise.
Well, my favorite, like, pop culture reference to Ecclesiastes is the song that was written by Pete Seeger, most popularized by the Birds, Turn, Turn, Turn. That's an Ecclesiastes, like, reference. And then that's also that same verse that that song is based on is what Kevin Bacon uses to like say Dance Is Okay and Footloose.
Oh,
like,
I just watched like, that for
you know,
the first
A Time for All Seasons, and he's like, A Time to Dance. That's that same verse.
Yes. I just watched that for the first time very recently, so I love that. It was a Footloose Dirty Dancing double feature that Tessa and I did. And let me tell
nice
you,
work.
Those movies have more in common besides dancing. And they were both, it was a great double feature.
I don't know. Like, all that being said, I don't know if I've ever seen, like, sat down and seen Footloose, like, from start to end. It's just one of those movies that, like, was always on cable. Or
right.
Felt like it was always on cable growing up.
Well, I really enjoyed it. I mean, I didn't like it as much as Dirty Dancing, but I definitely
think
you should watch it. I think you would like it. Speaking of not
Lithgow wasn't just an alien.
Speaking of not dancing, guy. This episode did not have any dancing in it.
But what if it did?
What if it was like a musical war episode? I really enjoyed Jake's inner monologue throughout the episode, thinking at first about how he was going to get out of writing this article on Bashir and how he didn't understand a word Julian was saying. And I'm like thinking to myself, this is why people have beats when they're journalists. Like the people that write about medical stuff, like know about medical stuff or should know about medical stuff. Like the
yeah.
people writing about like yeah. policy in the government should know about policy in the government. I also thought this episode does a really good job in showing what some people think war is, in showing that what some people think war is not what it actually is. Like, I imagine it seems really cool to be, like, a war journalist. Like, whenever you see a piece of pop culture that has that kind of character in it, it's, like, always, like, the cool guy or whatever. But the realities are quite terrifying.
Yeah, and, like, it's interesting too, right? Because as I was rewatching the episode, I'm like, huh, writer does like war correspondent shit. This is giving like Hemingway in World War One, kind of like right before, you know, he started like, you know, breaking out and, you know, the whole The Lost Generation thing and everything else. And I looked it up and that was a cited inspiration for this episode. So
good.
I gave
job,
myself
Matt.
a little pat on the
that
back
happened
there,
that
right?
was like me with last episode when I got really excited that Cyrano was mentioned in the notes, like on Memory Alpha.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, I came to that conclusion yeah. myself. Good job.
Which just between this back to back and even how it's just funny how different the last two episodes
yeah.
have been tonally. But it's like Star Trek is by nerds for nerds. All different kinds of nerds. You get all your different kind of nerddoms, but like, yeah. Do you like, you know, literature? Here's your two literature references. Do you like science? Come back next week and we'll drop science
yeah.
nerd shit, right? Like,
and in 2 weeks we'll have timey-wimey shit.
Yeah.
I also
have inside jokes for the X-Files girlies.
Also, I wanted to mention that I was watching this episode with some friends, and we had like a conversation about whether the Defiant is capable of landing on a planet, because obviously they went to go rescue them. And I didn't remember the answer to that, but I have that book with the Deep Space Nine and the Defiant schematics in it.
Yeah.
Because we all, the Defiant has like shuttles that it can transport and stuff. And like,
but it's a small ship to begin with. It's not
yeah,
like,
it's
you
smaller
know,
than
the
Voyager,
Enterprise
obviously.
Or
but like, so
yeah.
while it is.
Voyager's pretty small too.
Yeah. That's, yeah. And while it's 100% possible for the Defiant to land on planets, they do prefer not to. Like, they would rather deploy shuttles than like land. So. That answered that question. I was really happy that like we were talking about it, and I was like, I'll just reference my book here and got the answer I needed. Good job, book purchase.
Yeah, like it's kind of, it has like, you're right, and because I've looked at it too, it has like, you know, the landing struts, but it's like more of like kind of an emergency sort of thing, whereas like that was the big cool thing, air quotes, the cool feature of Voyager was that it, you know, was designed to land on the planet as a planet as much as it wanted, right?
Yeah.
Not that they ever did it a lot, but
right.
It's kind of like the Enterprise and saucer separation.
Yeah, that's true. I was just thinking about when they like land the Bird of Prey in Star Trek: The Voyage Home.
In
also.
Voyage Home. Yeah. And it's cloaked, and all of a sudden the garbage can just gets flushed.
I know. I love when the my favorite bit is like when the grass like goes down like in the park. But like the idea that you'd like see the grass is very funny to me.
Yeah.
So in all Star Trek episodes that are very serious, they have to have one quirk comedy moment at the beginning of the episode. So I had a little section on the quirk to Gino. I was really laughing at like they're constantly trying to make Kira's pregnancy like more comfortable for her, but also this instance,
by they do you mean Miles?
Yeah, Miles has his own ideas about like what Kira should and shouldn't be doing, and apparently one of the things she shouldn't be doing is having two rectogenos a day. And Quark is like trying to make, you know, a decaf, or not even a decaf, like a caffeine-free version of it, which apparently tastes disgusting. But I did love that Quark's like, I did the best I could. The removal of caffeine from beverages has plagued bartenders and restaurateurs for centuries. When he said that, I literally like was hysterical. I also think decaf coffee is fucking bullshit. Like, I think I'd just quit coffee if I was not allowed to have caffeine anymore. And also, every pregnant, I mean, obviously, I've never been pregnant, and thank God cannot get pregnant, but, like, at least most pregnant people I have met can, like, have at least one coffee, a regular coffee a day. So, I'll just say, thankfully, I don't need to quit caffeine, and I'm very happy to, like, continue my caffeine addiction for the rest of my life. We also learn a little bit about how Ferengis treat pregnancy, because there's, like, this whole, like, quippy debate about whether Miles even has a right to say what Kira should do with her body, because, as Worf says, it's his kid. And Quark calls Miles the lessee, because apparently in Ferengi, a pregnancy is considered a rental. Like, you're renting the space in the body. And I'm just like, wow.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to go, like, too far down this road, but, like, there's a whole, like, interesting conversation you could have there about, like, you know, surrogacy and, like, things
like
that. Yeah,
for
right?
sure. Like, I mean, I feel like they're... I would...
Because that's essentially what Kira's doing.
Yeah, I agree. And I feel like a coffee or two is not on par with, like, smoking cigarettes or drinking alcohol or, like, those kind of things. So
yeah.
I would say that if I was Kira and Miles and Keiko, when I was put in this situation, once things calmed down from the immediate shock of having the baby move from one person to the other, I probably would draw up, like, a contract.
Yeah, and like, I think based on, like, friends that I know have, like, explored it or even, like, you know, done it, a lot of that stuff is kind of, is... worked out, like, contract-wise,
it's very
in terms
clear
of, like, what
that,
the expectations are.
Yeah,
and stuff like
it's very
that,
clear,
right?
Like, because this happened kind of, like, you know, the plan was,
yeah,
when they got pregnant,
yeah,
was this was not the plan. Yeah. So, like, they probably never got to the point of, like, having a contract about it, when it seems like maybe they should have. So, the rest of the episode, I kind of put into one section. I mean, we have a little bit, like, back on the station, but it really is all part of the same...
It just gives
plot.
You a break from being on the front.
Exactly.
Is what it is,
so,
right? It's like a little breather.
So just to bring us to where the main plot is, the Klingons have attacked Ajalon Prime, which is a Federation colony, even though that there was a ceasefire agreement. And Julian wants to go help, but he's not sure that he should take Jake there. And Jake's like, I'm 18, blah, blah, blah. It's going to be great. We're going to help people. You know, and they get there, and it's really clear, like, it's not as simple as Jake thought it was going to be. We do have a scene back on the station where Sisko tells the rest of the crew, like, what's going on. The USS Farragut is en route to Ajalon Prime, and Drake and Bashir are planning to leave as soon as, like, reinforcements show up. But he's very clearly worried about Jake. So the part on the station and then later on the Defiant is everyone, like Odo, Dax, etc., like having conversations with Sisko of him trying to deal with his feelings about Jake being in this situation. Jake is very much not prepared for what he's seeing and going to be seeing. As I mentioned in, like, the intro, like, he very much is like, I'm going to be a cool, like, war correspondent. And when he gets there, it's quite shocking. I mean, people are almost dead, and he's seeing what happens when you're in, a situation with limited time and resources, and you can't save everyone. That is very much different. That's very different from his experience on Deep Space Nine, where he later says, even when they were under fire or under attack, like, they had so many more resources, but also his dad was there to protect him as well.
Yeah.
And immediately he gets, like, involved because it's all hands on deck. Like, even though he's not a doctor, they're like, okay, watch this patient, do this, do that. And it's a lot, but, like, I don't know what other choice you have sitting there and doing nothing.
Yeah.
There's this one guy that, like, claims that he was injured by the Klingons, and then Bashir notices that his foot is clearly, like, a phaser burn. So it was done with Starfleet equipment. So basically this guy, like, shot himself in the foot so that he didn't have to fight. And it reminded me of that episode of Downton Abbey where Thomas is, like, at the front in World War One, and he, like, raises his arm with, like, his lighter, and then someone, like, shoots it, and he does that on purpose so that he can go back home. Like, it really reminded me of that.
Yeah. Yeah, just that idea of, like, and I think that's, like, the whole, like, crux of the episode is, right, is, like, that thin line between courage and, like, cowardice, and how, like, it is, there are reflections of the same thing, and when you're in that kind of situation, it's, like, your self-preservation instincts, you're fighting against really strongly, and it's, like, yeah, sometimes you run away, and sometimes you end up blindly firing a phaser and collapsing a tunnel. And then, like, and it's how people perceive it outside, right? Like,
yeah, because everyone's looking at this guy like he's a coward, and, you know, I think his next thing that's going to happen to him is he's going to be court-martialed, probably.
And he doesn't even want therapy. He's like, I don't deserve to be in Starfleet.
No,
like,
he a couple times mentions, like, he wishes he had killed himself instead. Like, he had says once at one point, like, I wish I aimed higher.
I say, what's interesting about that, like, the follow-up scene, like, the two-hander scene between the guy and Jake, that was added, like, as they were filming the episode, because the episode was running about 3 minutes long, or 3 minutes short, I should say, sorry. And so, like, okay, we need another scene. So they did that one really quickly and put it in the episode as, like, an add-on so they could, like, you know, have that extra 3 minutes that they needed. And, like, it kind of is the whole thesis for the episode. Like, it kind of, like, becomes the most important scene. And then that final scene that we'll get to later has the weight it does because of that conversation, right?
Yeah, that I can't imagine.
For me, anyway.
No, I don't disagree, and I can't imagine what this episode would be like without that scene in it. Like, it wouldn't be as impactful, maybe. So, back on the station, we have Odo, who, like, was injured because he's a solid now, and I actually was glad they had that scene in there because life has been kind of busy lately, so Matt and I have not been necessarily meeting every week, and I actually forgot that Odo was a solid now. So I very much needed that scene in there. As I mentioned earlier, we find out from Dax that the Farragut has been destroyed, so there's no reinforcements coming, and, like, Odo is, like, about to ask, like, what do we do now? And, like, Sisko's just, like, he doesn't answer. He just is like, okay, we're getting prep the Defiant, we're gonna go rescue them, which, like, of course, that's his kid. Like, yes, I do think it's really interesting how Julian and the people that have been on Agilon Prime deal with what's happening around them compared to how Jake is dealing with what's around them. Like, there's a few times where Julian forgets that Jake is not a doctor, basically. He makes jokes that doctors make to help them get through, you know, like, in doing an incision in this food or whatever. And Jake is, like, he reacts by vomiting, which I think is extremely natural. That being said, I have a very similar sense of humor to what Julian is doing in this episode. So every time he makes like a morbid joke, like I'm finding it very funny. But I also know that like in the moment, I'd probably react closer to how Jake is reacting. Like if it, you know, like I'm obviously at the safety of my home laughing at the morbid jokes. But if I was actually in the situation, I don't know how I would handle that.
Yeah, it's just like different like coping mechanisms and whatever, right? And like in a lot of ways, I think it's like a pretty healthy way to cope for me.
I am a very big fan of like making light of things and joking about things when things are so serious. Like I would not be able to function if I didn't do that in my life.
But like Jake hasn't developed that.
He's only.
And again, I think resilience.
He's 18 years old. He hasn't really lived yet, you know?
No. And I think resilience is like a value neutral thing. I know a lot, like more broadly, kind of folks are like, oh my God, they're so resilient. That's so impressive. I could never be that way, blah, 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 blah. And it's like, to me, resilience isn't necessarily a virtue the way that we like.
Yeah.
Like we as a society, like, virtualize it.
No, I would agree with that.
Or put resilient people on a pedestal, because it means like it's value neutral to me, because it's mean you've been through a lot of shit to become a resilient person, and like that's all bad, you know, like that's some pretty bad gnarly shit, right? So that's why I think it's like value neutral. And I think even then, as I'm saying this, that's kind of what the crux of this episode is too, right? Because it's like Jake can be considered a hero at the end, and it's like we saw what happened, right?
Yeah. Exactly.
And I was like acting out of fear.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So. And then they were like, you're a hero. And he didn't feel that way. And, you know, he thought he was cowering. And he did cower at first.
Mm-hmm.
The Klingons eventually take out the power reactor and they start to lose power in the cave. Someone suggests using generators, but the generators are being used already to hold up the shields. And obviously the shields are very important. So Bashir kind of like remembers that they had a generator on their runabout. So the next plan is for Jake and Bashir to go get the generator. And this is kind of where shit goes bad. Jake like loses sight of Bashir and runs away, and he's terrified. And I kind of felt like there's that scene where he finds that wounded Starfleet soldier and he wants to help him. Yeah, the guy is like, you're just trying to overcome your cowardice. And I'm like, okay, like Jake's not a Starfleet officer and did not really know what he was getting into. Like maybe let's not make him feel bad. Like, but this guy doesn't have time to think about that because of his situation. So I'm not like mad at this guy for saying that. I just like in my mind, I'm like, okay, be nice to Jake. But like that guy obviously was under a lot of stress, and I don't think
he was dying.
Yeah. Right? Like I'm not like sitting here saying like he should have chose his last words better or anything. Like, I'm not criticizing him. I just felt like, okay, they're like in two completely different situations, this guy and Jake.
Yeah. Yeah, that's that whole sequence where like Jake runs talking about, you know, literary references. It like is inspired by The Red Badge of Courage by Stephen Crane, which is a novel that takes place during the American Civil War.
I have heard of it and know of it, but I've not read it.
Yeah, so he flees the battlefield and then is overcome with shame and then longs for a wound or the titular Red Badge of Courage to counteract his cowardice.
He wants to shoot himself in the foot with a phaser.
or
a real wound. You know, like,
yeah.
Or like a not self-inflicted wound. I mean, they're both real wounds. I do like how they cut to Sisko worrying about Jake after these heavy scenes. I mean, the scenes with Sisko are also heavy, but it gives us a slight break from the violence that we're seeing. And I really appreciate that. Like, we have the scene on the Defiant. Jadzia is trying to comfort Sisko by talking about stories about when Dax's previous host, Audrid, had a sick daughter who, and you know, after being in the hospital for a couple weeks. I kind of always forget that Dax has been a parent before. I'm pretty sure she's been a dad and a mom, but I don't really remember that.
Yeah. Yeah, no, she has. She even talks about both. So, like, like one, she talked about Tobin.
Oh, Tobin's one of
her male hosts. And then Audred, I think, was the other one she was talking about where she read the stories.
Yes. I really felt the episode needed those scenes so that it wasn't just, like, hammering violence in our eyes for 45 minutes or 43 minutes, I guess, to be exact. After this happens, we see that Jake finds his way back to the cave, and everyone thought he was dead because he didn't return with Bashir. Bashir is injured, but somehow managed to get the generator back as well, which I think is another way to save time and money. Like, we didn't need to see him actually do all of those things for it to be effective, and I think that that's fine, and it made sense. Like, it didn't feel like skipped over or anything. But we have Jake feeling really guilty for leaving Bashir alone, and Bashir feeling really guilty for bringing Jake into a war zone. And Jake does not know how to handle this feeling and is just very angry. And I think that I would act the same way as an 18-year-old, like mad at yourself, you know?
Yeah.
I think the next note is kind of what... I think I said a lot of that already.
Yeah.
In the final act of the episode, Jake ends up having to choose a little bit of violence. They are evacuating a cave, and he's in a situation where he has to fire the phase rifle. And apparently that caused the cave-in and gave people time to escape, and he passes out. But when we wake up, or when he wakes up, Sisko's there. So, like, time has passed. And he really, even though he was just trying to stay alive, like, not consciously thinking about what he was shooting at, he really did give people time to get out of there. One of the things I really like about this, because he did write his story in the end, and he shared it with his dad and with Bashir. And... the entire episode, Jake feels so alone with his feelings, and I think it was really nice for him to hear from his dad that, like, after reading his story on what happened, that Jake's feelings were similar to how anyone would feel in that situation. And I think it's just a really reassuring and nice thing to hear that, like, you're not alone.
Yeah.
And he probably needed to hear that from his dad more than anyone else. Oh, I think we also get a little bit of the ceasefires back on at the end as well.
Yeah, definitely.
Was there anything else that you wanted to say about the episode before we move on?
Yeah, just that, again, doing my little research before the recording. Sadig said he really, like, enjoyed the, like, big brother, little brother kind of, like, dynamic, as he described it, between Jake and Julian in this episode, and really kind of thought something that works really well in the episode, and then was a little bummed that they never kind of went back to it and it didn't become kind of like a running thing.
Right. Like, there are a bunch of scenes in earlier, or a bunch of episodes in earlier seasons where Jake is, excuse me, kind of interning with Miles.
Yeah.
So we get a lot of scenes with the two of them. It would have been nice to see him interact with Bashir more. I agree with Siddig.
Yeah, and it's just interesting too. Like, I think this is a really strong episode, and I think this is, like, one of those calling card episodes for DS9 that kind of allows shows in the ways in which DS9 is different from, you know, the squeaky cleanness of, like, next gen, or you know, whatever, things like this. This is, like, kind of like a DS9 calling card episode. And I think it's, like, a really good Jake episode. But, like, we've talked about how they maybe don't quite know what to do with Jake.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to kind of see that going forward. It'll be interesting to see that going forward.
I do like that they're sticking with his writing. I mean, I know we've seen the future. Oh, no,
I think that was the smartest decision, was not doing Wesley 2.0.
Yeah, but I do feel
and sending him to Starfleet.
Yeah, I think it's really... I mean, I know we see that episode from the future where he has lived his life as a writer. Actually, that episode came up in conversation yesterday. I was talking about Tony Todd. But yeah, like, I don't know if you listened to the episode where Lazi and I discussed Grilka's, not Grilka, that was us, never mind. I don't remember, I don't know if you listened to the episode Body Parts from last season where Lazi and I were discussing, it's the episode where the pregnancy gets moved to Kira.
Yeah.
We were watching that, like, the center seat, that's docuseries on Star Trek.
Yeah.
And one of the things when they hired Sirach, Lofton was like, we don't want you to be Wesley 2.0. And he's like, well, good, because I don't even know, like, who that is. Which I thought was very funny.
That is funny. Well, now it's time for the Yelter Water Thirst Quencher. This is like the antithesis of a thirsty episode.
They might have been thirsty for literal water. I would say that. That's about it.
Yeah, no euphemistic thirst week. What about most Star Trek thing? Did you have any?
I have two. One of them is that something's happening on the way to or from somewhere. They were on their way back from a medical conference when this all went down. And the second one is, like, a Deep Space Nine one specifically. Like, when you have a serious episode, you have to have, like, a really fun Quark scene mixed in there. Last time this happened, it was the scene where he was, like, having all of his merchandise.
Quark's is fun. Come to Quark's. Walk. Run. Don't walk. Run. Yes. That's how it goes.
So good. So those were my two.
Come to Quark's.
Kind of hogged them.
Come to Quark's. Don't walk, run. There we go. Yeah, no, the conference one and the shuttle was mine too. And hey, we also lost another runabout, didn't we?
Yes, and we lost the Farragut as well.
So, all right. Well, until next time, Elise, where can folks find more of you on the internet?
You can find me on Blue Sky Letterboxd and Storygraph at Chicken Tendi. That's T-E-N-D-I. You could find my other podcast, Fang Bangers Pod, on Blue Sky and Instagram at Fang Bangers Pod. That's bangers with a Z or Z, as well as anywhere you listen to podcasts. Real quick, I was doing a New York Times, like, mini crossword from today or yesterday or whatever, and one of them was like, I'm spoiling this. Hopefully it wasn't today's. It was Z, like the letter. And because of you and Laws, I like had written Z and it was wrong. It was Z. E-E was the correct answer. And I was like, damn it. I mean, it was fine. I still got it. But like, I was laughing that I've like been, you know, doing the like.
Hanging out with Commonwealth people.
Yes, you Commonwealth people. Exactly.
Well, I guess Laws would be Commonwealth. He'd just be proper British, but you know what
I mean. Whatever. You know what I mean.
You can catch me on Letterboxd and Blue Sky at MattyQ. You can catch us together on Blue Sky and Instagram at PodRace, and you can email us at podrace@gmail.com.
Please remember to rate and review us on the podcatching system of your choice. Thank you again to our editor, Melissa, and DJ Empirical for our interstellar theme song.
And until next time, computer and program.
Bye.